Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to What Happened When? With the voice of your childhood, Tony Schiavone. Tony, what's going on, man? How are you?
Isn't it great doing watching wrestling and being able to talk about it, make fun of it, and go back in time and relive some of the moments that you remember as a kid?
Dude, I love it. This is one of those episodes that I get excited about because this is my peak fandom as a Ute, as they said, and my cousin Vinny. We're going all the way back to 1989, May 15th, 1989, to be exact. So as you're listening to this, this episode aired 35 years ago, and that just doesn't seem like that should be. Does 89 feel like 35 years ago to you, Tony?
In many ways it does, but in many ways it's like, didn't that just happen yesterday? And this is the time that I was working for the WWF. So this is kind of in my wheelhouse. My family had just moved and joined me. They moved in April. I had moved earlier and moved and joined me in Connecticut. And I was enjoying life, man, enjoying life. There's a part in the show that you're going to see me interview Miss Elizabeth. Again, you're going to see me, and unfortunately, we cannot track it. It would have been really great to be able to track it. And when we get to that part, I'll talk about the lead up and how we worked that interview out. But you're right. 35 years goes by quickly. And again, Conrad, the older you get, the quicker it's going to go. So yep. Buckle your seatbelt, as they say.
I love your explanation. I loved your explanation about time that you told us before. And we'll talk about that because I think someone told it to you about percentages, and I've actually stolen that and used it. So yeah. Let's get in our time machine today. We go way back to May 15th, 1989. We want you to watch along with us. And Peacock has this posted for you. We're watching an episode of Primetime. So you want to go to Peacock, just use a little search bar, type in Primetime. And you want to go to season 5, episode 20. That's what you're looking for. Primetime on Peacock, season 5, episode 20. It aired on May 15th, 1989. This was a part of Tony's one-year vacation with Vince McMahon and the World Wrestling Federation as he was stepping away from Ted Turner and WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions and the NWA. So an exciting time in the Schiavone household, a really exciting time in my fandom. I mean, 1989 is what hooked me. We're going to have references to Zeus because we're just, like, I don't know, 6 weeks away from the movie coming out, maybe less than that. No Holds Barred is right around the corner. It's going to be a lot of fun today, and we've got some fun, more current stuff to talk about too, but let's go ahead and get going with our playback. I want to give you guys a heads up. We're not going to pause for commercials today. We're just going to do it live and keep it rolling. WWE would prefer that we did not promote their Peacock. They would prefer that we don't voice track or we don't tell people to go to Peacock or we don't really know what that's about. So you're not going to hear any of the audio from that show. That would make you want to go watch it. So watch it if you want. And if you don't, Tony and I will just talk over it, make fun of it, explain some backstory.
Well, we can't even promote where you can get it.
Oh no. I'm just saying like, if we can't track it, it's like, they clearly don't want traffic to Peacock, right? Like when okay. You and I would watch something once upon a time, WWE used to release like the most watched things of the week.
Yep.
Like here's the top 5 or top 10 most viewed things on the WWE network. Way, you know, pre-Peacock, or as we like to call it, PP. Anyway, whatever you and Bruce were watching that week, that was always on the list. Always. It wasn't like an anniversary or anything like that. And that's actually the reason I reached out to Bruce and we did something else to wrestle with. And Bruce became creative director and blah, blah, blah. Well, they don't like any of that now. By God, don't watch it. Don't talk about it. Just let it sit on the shelf and collect dust. So that's what they want to do. So let me say this. Don't feel left out. Somebody posted this on YouTube too. So if you don't have Peacock, it's probably there and a lot of other places. Just look for it. May 15th, 1989 primetime. But yeah, Tony, they don't want us to track it. And I really wanted to play the old theme song. I love this old theme song.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember. Dun, 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 dun. Din, 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 din.
I mean, it something had a like cool it. Little beat.
Yeah, it sure did. Had a cool little beat.
Well, let's take a beat and let's get going here. We're going to have some fun today. It's May 15th, 1989. We're going to be having fun watching the way wrestling used to be. Tony, do you have a countdown or are we going to kick it old school here?
Yeah, no, I got a countdown. Now, I need to say something about this countdown because, because it's, well, it's kind of long. Okay. It's kind of long. It's kind of odd. But damn it, there was a lot of effort put into this.
Okay.
This comes to us from Spencer Jackson. Spencer, we appreciate you, buddy.
Hell yeah, we do. Thanks for sending us all this effort that you put into this.
Exactly. And he did it as a ring announce.
Okay.
He was a ring announcer, okay? And he went back and he remembered a lot of the stuff that we did, okay?
All right.
So, Spencer, we appreciate you. And everybody, here we go. Spencer Jackson.
Making his way to the ring. In a glass-bottom boat, captain, by parking lot legend Klondike Bill. He is accompanied by the love of his life, Lois Giovanni,
and
the love of his penis, Whitney Wright.
Wow.
He hails from wherever he damn well pleases, by way of Craigsville, West Virginia. Weighing in at a lot less than Conrad. He is a Francine enthusiast and the proud owner of a button on a fur coat. This is Tony Schiavone. 3, 2, 1, play.
Dude, that was a great countdown. I love that. Weighing a lot less than Conrad Thompson, the love of his penis. Oh man, that was super fun. And we heard the cats in the background. This is a true OG of WHW. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Spencer. Good job.
How about this graphic package right there? Did you see that slide flying in there for Primetime Wrestling?
That is old school, man.
Oh, there's our man.
Brother Love arrives. Oh wow.
God, this is the classic shit, man. Like,
isn't it great? There's WrestleMania 3 and Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon and the stuff they did.
They're one of the best comedy duos in the history of wrestling. Yeah. Don't you agree?
Oh, hey, listen, I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about the great teams, the great announced teams.
Yes.
In pro wrestling history, I think JR and Jerry Lawler are number one. I would put Gorilla Monsoon working with Jesse Ventura in big events is like number two, and Jesse with Bobby Heenan doing this is like number three. And then Vince working with Jesse, probably number four for great teams of pro wrestling. Now we did this. This was the studios in Stamford.
So this isn't Baltimore at this point.
No, this is Stamford.
Okay.
We did it at studios in Stamford, and I would, a lot of times, me and Lord Alfred would be tucked away in a sound booth and they would pitch to matches. And I don't think Alfred and I'm not so sure Alfred and I, sometimes they would just take the matches from like Challenge or Superstars.
Right.
And use the commentary. But sometimes they would take dark matches and Alfred and I would voice it over in the booth as this show was going on. So it was kind of like, almost kind of like live to tape.
Wow.
We would do it.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah. So this was really cool.
I see a lot of interesting things on here too. We're going to see King Duggan and King Haku. Well, no spoilers. We're going to see the debut of Lanny Poffo. They're already making reference to Zeus. You know, what is he doing? Is he going to be, you know, and of course Heenan's like, he's the star of the movie and they're hyping the premiere. And it's a really fun segment, and we're starting with Brutus the freaking Barber Beefcake, who I've given a hard time to over the years on our podcast, but man, in this era, the dude got super over. I mean, this character really resonated with kids and they loved it. And wow, look at Tony Leon. Look who the referee is here too.
Oh, rugged Ronnie Garvin.
Former NWA World's Heavyweight Champion right there.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the enhancement talent chosen here for Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Just what he's wearing today, his hairstyle. Could you describe that for us?
Don't know where they were, but and here they're doing one of those classic fly-in interviews.
Yes,
which I thought was just very, very well done.
Agree.
They knew how to do things back then.
This was filmed in Omaha at the Civic Auditorium on April 26, 1989. It was a sellout, 10,310 fans there.
Well, Tony Leone, to me, looks like a guy that they just walked outside. And as the people were queuing up, they say, hey, you want to wrestle tonight? And he went, yeah. Said, okay, we got some extra black boots and some trunks that may not fit you. Don't shave your legs, and you can wrestle. That's what it looked like.
I mean, that looks like somebody's uncle, you know, at a barbecue, and he's got his swimming trunks on, but maybe everybody wishes they had a little longer, you know?
Right. It's amazing now that when we go out and wrestle in these towns, we bring in what they call local enhancement talent. Back then, I don't think they had them as much as they have them now, because there's obviously a lot more independent wrestling now than there was in 89.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think they probably had just as many.
You really think so?
It was a more closed society. It's not like you could just email somebody. You had to kind of know somebody.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But I've heard like the Italian Stallion. I mean, you've heard stories from the Hardys over the years where he would bring like a van full of guys in. So maybe that's it. You know, there's a handful of guys and they would, WWE would say, hey, we're coming to your town. Or maybe, you know, they would know, hey, you're coming. Do you want me to bring a van of van full of guys you can beat up?
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, obviously email and the internet change everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So, and now he's putting him out. Now, what is Rugged Ronnie Garvin, the referee here for? This is an angle, I guess.
Yeah. This is storyline. Of course, he's had this big feud with Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yes.
Okay. And they're talking on commentary during this match. They're talking about, or Bobby Heenan is talking about how short he is. So they're building all that up.
Okay. Got it. Going to cut off some hair. Don't you do it.
I've heard through the years that, like George South had said, that whenever they would do this, you know, getting your hair cut meant, as Zack Ryder might say, Matt Cardona might say, they'd pad the lope, get a little extra cheese on your whopper, as JR might say. So if there's a little extra money in cutting your hair, guys like George South would say, no problem, start growing that mullet out.
And the thing about it is he would not shave your head. He would just cut some hair and you could have it trimmed up and get a little extra money.
Why not?
Little extra money for some trim. Can't beat that, can you, Conrad?
Man, everybody loves a little extra money for some trim.
Sure do.
That's an old man joke, and I love you for it, by the way.
Speaking of old man jokes, you come across any Egyptians lately?
Yeah, I did, actually. Down at the, what was his name? I know his last name was Dickhead. Oh, Dickhead. Nicholas. Yeah.
Nicholas Dickhead.
He was down there at... Richard's Italian Bistro in Gainesville, I believe. I think their catchphrase is having a hard time holding these pepperonis down.
Just sometimes in the world, you come across gifts that keep on giving.
What world do you live in?
It's a different world from you.
No, that was a line he said.
Oh, okay. He did.
Yeah.
Okay.
When he's had a few cocktails, sometimes he'll hit people with, what world do you live in? And then as you've heard a million times, people don't get it.
Yeah.
People don't get it. What world do you live in? Oh. I did like that. He gave $1,000 tip to tell one staff member. To tell another staff member to kiss his ass. Because I'll be honest, anybody who wants to pay me $1,000 to tell somebody else to kiss someone else's ass.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in. Man, look at Mean Gene. God.
Yeah. Any say day, buddy. going across the angles. That is in the background there that you saw was, and I think he worked there for a long, long time. He still may work there. There's a guy named Kevin Quinn.
Oh, wow.
Who worked, that is what we called Edit One. That was the biggest edit suite, the main edit suite. The other edit suites were very small. That's Kevin Quinn there.
That's like the classic background for so many WWF shots, though.
Right. And the table to Gene's elbow, right of his elbow there, or the
where desk. The magazine is.
Yeah. That's where Kevin Dunn would sit during the edits.
Okay.
Or,
what do you think he's up to these days?
Kevin Dunn?
Yeah.
Anything he damn well pleases, man, counting his money, right?
Yes. By the way, you see Jake the Snake here taking some of the $1 million man's money and handing it to little kid fans in the crowd. And when I say money, I mean $100 bills. And these kids are, I mean, they're showing it close up. They're losing their mind. Yeah. This was a little thing. They didn't have to do it all the time.
Right.
But man, look at the kids just go absolutely bananas for it. I mean, it's a great segment on TV that really only costs a few hundred bucks.
Exactly. And that is that Virgil out?
That's Virgil out, and here comes the snake. Mm-hmm. By the way, Jake tells a great story about how he got this look. Of course, when he was in Mid-South before he came to work for Vince, he wore karate pants and had pull-on boots. Uh-huh. Of course, Vince wanted neon tights and snakeskin boots and to carry a snake to the ring. And of course, as you hear Jake say, he's like, hey, I'm scared of snakes, and I wear karate pants. And I've calculated how much time I save by not having lace-up boots and just having pull-on boots. So I don't think I'm going to do any of that. And allegedly, according to Jake, Vince wrote down a number on a little sheet of paper and slid it over and said, well, someone I'm going to call Jake the Snake, who's going to wear neon tights and lace-up boots and carry a snake to the ring, is going to make this amount of money. And allegedly, Jake said something like, where's the snake? Let me meet him. And here we are. But these, I mean, think about just what legendary, iconic characters. I mean, on some level, Jake the Snake and the Million Dollar Man became like pop culture icons. It wouldn't have been out of place for them to show up, as silly as it sounds, at a Hollywood award show. Like if they were at the Emmys or something like that, people would be like, well, yeah, they're big television star. Everybody knows who they are.
Sure. We did a shoot. I may have mentioned this before, but we did a shoot using Edit One that you just saw and using the studio that Bobby and Gorilla are in right now, where Jake, and I'm sure it's out there somewhere, where Jake did this stand up where he had all these different snakes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I remember being in Edit One and watching him do that. And he was like, he kept saying to himself, okay, I'm a freaking idiot. I'm all here of all these goddamn snakes. He was talking to himself and he was literally petrified about what he was doing. Cause I think he had rattlesnake. I think he had a cobra. They had all these different fucking snakes. And I watched it from Edit One because I was not going to go in that fucking studio with all those fucking snakes around. But I remember him talking to himself between takes and you could hear him. And they was just, he was like telling himself how fucking big of an idiot he was. For handling all these snakes.
These back and forth promos here are fantastic. And we know that this feud, I mean, let's remember now, a lot of this stuff was shot in late April and very early May of 1989, but they're going to keep this going and pay it off at next year's WrestleMania in Toronto. And this story allegedly has to be reworked midstream. That's at least according to, 411 Mania's recap, or as you call it, the 411 fuck sheet.
Mm-hmm.
They pointed out that the angle would have to be reworked midstream because I guess Jake had a little trouble with the law in this era. Do you remember that?
Don't remember that. No.
Whenever we say 411 fuck sheet, I think about our pal, Eddie Kingston,
mm-hmm.
who I know was involved in some big time stuff over the weekend. And he's slotted to be in a pretty prime time spot at Double or Nothing. The rumor and innuendo, though, is that Eddie might be hurting a little bit. Do you know of any update on Eddie? Is he going to be okay?
I haven't, but thank you for bringing that up. I I will text him right now, see how he's doing.
I texted just to see, you know, not looking for scoops, just wanted to see how our man was doing, and
yeah,
I haven't heard back yet. But by the way, we've got the Warlord in the ring.
Tim Horner is another remnant or casualty of the Jim Herd era, right?
Oh, yeah.
No. I mean, Tim, Jim Cornette one time said, I thought it was pretty hilarious that, and I know I'll get it wrong, that Tim Horner, when he does a promo, is kind of like a guilty man trying to make believe he's innocent, or something to that effect. Wasn't the greatest promo, but Tim and Brad Armstrong were a very good team. Did some great stuff. They weren't big stars, but they were a very good team, and they were used a lot. So now Jim Herd's taken over WCW, and Tim Horner has moved on as enhancement talent for the Warlord. Saw the Warlord and Barbarian. They still go out together.
Yeah, they do.
And make appearances. I saw them from a distance when I was at WrestleCon, Philadelphia, during WrestleMania weekend, and saw them. There's, you know, when you go to these events, as someone who's been in wrestling for a long time, when you go to these events, you kind of like, you don't want to get up and walk away from your table because there's a lot of people around, right?
Right.
But you, well, you want to go around and say hello to everybody.
Look at that power slam there.
Yeah, man.
Hey, let me ask you something. According to 411mania.com, as you call it, 411 fuck sheet.
Yeah.
Horner's fate is kind of funny. He quit the NWA because he refused to job to Lyle Alzado's character on an episode of Learning the Ropes and ended up signing to the WWF to be a jobber. So he refuses to job in a fake worked wrestling match, and the only work he can find is doing jobs in the real worked wrestling matches. I didn't know that. Is that real?
Don't know that. Well, you know, obviously, it 411 fuck sheet reports that it's real.
Well, listen, I mean, they read that in the Observer, the Torch, or a book somewhere, or heard it in a shoot interview. Not like they made it up. I find it funny that once upon a time, man, you had to, I can't lose on TV.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Now I'll just lose
on TV.
On TV.
Yeah, that paycheck will, change your mind. I don't know if you noticed this. We were watching Tim Horner and the Barbarian, and hopefully everybody is watching along with us. If you can, I know some of you guys drive trucks out there and you're just listening to us bullshit, which is great. We love you. Thanks. But if you're watching along, I don't know if you noticed right there, but they had Wrestling Challenge, the banner. They had the WWF logo still there, but the banner Wrestling Challenge, the name Wrestling Challenge was blurred out. Did you notice that?
Yeah, but someone owns that trademark, believe it or not. WWE let it lapse. Somebody got it. And so they actually had to spend quite a bit of money going back and blurring it out. It probably would have been easier just to make the guy an offer, but I don't know what the deal is there. I just know for sure that it was a trademark issue.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody thinks they can book.
I wonder where that nameplate is for the brain, you know, the WWF and the brain number one, like everybody used to have those on their desk way back when. I don't think that's as common now, but his being a custom wood one. I hope his daughter has that on a shelf somewhere or something. Cause that's a cool little memento for dad.
Yeah, it sure is.
So how about this? Look, we got Greg, the Hammer Valentine coming out with the Honky Tonk Man. And their presentation looks like $1 million here. I mean, that is clearly an Olivia Walker robe that Greg's wearing. Is that Mike McGurk doing the ring announcing?
Sure is. Mike McGurk was at the breakfast we had at WrestleCon for High Spots. First time I'd seen her. And she actually surprised me when I went down, introduced everybody, and went, holy shit, Mike McGurk.
What a fucking entrance this is, dude. One of my all-time favorites. It's Demolition. And what's great is I just love their look as a kid because they look like badasses. And then I get a little older and I'm like, boy, was that some S&M bondage bullshit they were pushing on kids and we just didn't know?
Of course it was.
I had no idea. Because I'm a kid. I don't know that people tie me up and pour hot wax on my balls. I mean, that's what Shivani does when he gets off the road on Sunday.
Here comes the axe.
Here comes a smasher.
And bend over Conrad.
What?
Little bastard.
No. We don't like that.
Okay, something like that. Okay.
Hey, by the way, I was curious how old people are. You know, I'm kind of low key obsessed with that. Do you want to guess how old Gorilla Monsoon was when this was filmed? Because we just saw him and Bobby at the desk. If you had to guess, don't look it up. Just guess how old was Gorilla here?
54.
And how old do you think Bobby was?
Probably 47.
51 and 43. You were real close.
Wow.
Okay. I would have guessed both guys were 50.
Okay.
But it's 51 and 43. 40? And it's interesting. I'm not saying this to be an asshole, but I would never guess that Chris Jericho is older than Gorilla Monsoon is here. Like, isn't that weird how people age differently?
Yeah, but you know, lifestyles are different now.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Gorilla had done so much, and Gorilla was still, I don't know. You probably know this, and I don't know if our buddy Derek had done any research on this, but Gorilla was a big part of Vince McMahon Sr.'s company.
Yes.
And I think he was still a part of the ownership of the WWF at this time. I don't know if he sold out or not, sold his quote-unquote shares or not. But he was a big part of the ownership and a part of. And what I loved about Gorilla Monsoon was he was just so larger than life when he was ever around the studio, back in the locker room area, is just so respected by everybody.
Wow.
And the way he handled himself and the way he talked, one of the greatest men ever, truly one of the nicest, greatest men ever. But you could tell that he just didn't give a fuck. And I say that respectfully. You know, some people don't give a fuck. And
right.
You can tell they don't give a fuck because the way they put their effort into their work. But Gorilla Monsoon just knew who he was and knew he just carried himself around like just a gigantic, larger than life person. I can't say enough about him, how much I respected him and how much I really loved him. And I say that, honestly. And, was one of those guys that when I work with, he and JR both taught me a lot about announcing and how to put things over and how to sell things. I don't know if you hear in the background.
Is she okay? I mean, did she fall?
No, she didn't fall. It's, she's on the phone. Okay. And the Beagles are running crazy. So now she wants, and it's raining here. And if the Beagles run out, they're going to have their muddy paws come in. And it's just, it's her life. Man, she was in Canada. So anyway, kidding. Here we go.
This particular match we're looking at here is a match that was filmed in Des Moines. As you see, the Saturday night's main event banner hanging in the background. They also did a wrestling challenge taping on this show.
Uh-huh.
And it was filmed at the Veterans Auditorium in Des Moines, April 25th, 1989.
Well, let's see. Plug here for AEW. We're going to be coming to Des Moines, I believe, in June.
AEWTIX.com. AEW is coming to a town near you sooner rather than later.
Wells Fargo Arena on June 12th, AEW Dynamite in Des Moines. I don't know if the Wells Fargo Arena Des Moines is the same building here that they're wrestling in or not. Nope. The referee takes a nice bump. This is before Greg Valentine dyed his hair black and became Rhythm and Blues, right?
That's right. That would be later. Yeah. And it is a different building there in Des Moines. That building you're going to was built in 2005.
Yeah. Look at the fans standing here.
Demolition is over, man. One of the most over acts. And look who's out there. It's Rugged Ronnie Garvin. Of course, this is going to be knee deep in story. Right. You know, something I just realized really for the first time ever. Oh, here comes the megaphone. I just realized for the first time ever that Demolition would have to work twice in a taping. I guess I knew that. I just never really thought about it. But think about that. That means they've got to either be careful with their face paint in the first match, or they got to go take it off and reapply it in the second. I mean, it feels like that would have taken forever to do that paint, right? I would make sure if I'm wrestling twice, don't touch my head. I don't want to have to do this again. Yeah. What a pain in the ass that would be to have to do it twice on the same day.
And this was back before makeup in the back.
Yeah, you do it yourself. Nobody's doing it for you.
Right.
Oh, look at them just wearing out Ronnie Garvin. So now you see why Ronnie Garvin was a ref in the first match. Just had to establish him. Isn't it crazy, too, to think? I mean, that's a former NWA champion. He was main eventing the NWA equivalent of WrestleMania against Ric Flair for the big gold belt. And now he's wearing a bow tie, short sleeve shirt. Looks like he's here to repair your copy machine in the office.
Yeah, it's amazing that the changeover at what it did. Many of the stars that were main stars. Do I have a dog in here? I don't know if you can hear Lois in the background.
Oh, she's wearing somebody out, man.
Yeah. Yak, 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 yak.
So Gorilla's 51, Bobby's 43, and that means you are just 30 years old here, Tony. How about that? A young whippersnapper, Shivani, in this one.
Yeah, man. Young whippersnapper. Isn't it something? And we still had five kids. I had five kids before I was 30.
Man, you just love to let it soak, didn't you?
Apparently so. Love to let it soak. Hey, by the way, hello to people who have joined us live here.
Hey.
Hey, Denovius is with us. Hey, Denovius. Coach Rosie, as always, and Alex Wheaton. Let's see who else we got. We've got Michael MacIsaac.
Yep.
Lindsay is here. Sean Mooney is on, by the way. This is the
event center.
The event center, and what this was is this was the hole that they would fill. And he would do a generic event center here. They would fill a hole with interviews, generic interviews, and then they would cover it up in local markets to promote. It was kind of the equivalent of what I used to do when I did the microphone back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Promoting towns. This was the generic one. And of course, then they would slot it in Primetime Wrestling, which was a cable show. Lindsay's with us. I don't know if you saw Lindsay got married.
Yeah.
I believe.
You see who her officiant was?
Yeah. What's that?
Did you see who the officiant was?
No. Who was that?
Eric Bischoff.
Really?
He became an ordained minister and married Lindsay off. How about that?
And I saw Lindsay in her wedding dress. She was beautiful. Lindsay, we appreciate you, girl.
Absolutely.
Patrick McGall is here. Patrick.
Your boy.
Yeah, I like Patrick. The only thing Patrick did in life that was good was marry.
Hey, looking under here, he does not look well.
No. Chroma Key is not too good here either.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Bobby Heenan's jacket is going bananas.
Yeah, I know. It is going bananas. And of course, this is, again, they would have backstage what they would call English 1, English 2, and then pre-tapes. And English 1 and English 2 were these little huts that they built. Or if they had rooms, they would put them in rooms. And everything was done on chroma key.
As a kid, man, I loved it that everybody had their own little logo and graphic. We saw one for Hillbilly Jim. Here's the one for Andre. Do you recall who perhaps was responsible for making those graphics and logos that really became identifiers for each individual talent?
I do not, but I know it was somebody that worked in graphics in the back. I don't know who it was, to be honest with you.
I heard from Sean Mooney this past week. What a nice guy he is, man.
Yeah, he reached out to me too and just wanted to say, hey, congratulations on your career and yeah, man, I think about this a lot. I think about at my age, how fortunate I am to still be relevant in the business, you know?
You're a lot more than relevant in the business, man. You're the voice of AEW. I know you would argue that, but I think most people would not. I mean, with all due respect to Taz and Excalibur and JR and all the other great folks, you're sort of the jack of all trades where you're on almost every show. So you're inescapable. If you're an AEW fan, you're a Tony Schiavone fan.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly do appreciate the fan support I get when I go out. And I do take time to say hello to the fans.
This is the debut of the Genius. We've been getting vignettes for the Genius for several weeks, maybe 5 or 6 weeks at this point, I'd guess. But this is the first time we're actually going to see him wrestle a match. He's going to be wrestling Jim Powers here. And I think the ring announcer, I'm not sure, but I think that's fucking Mel Phillips.
Oh, my God.
I didn't get a good look at him, but it was an African-American ring announcer in 1989, and I'm just guessing that that had to be him. Did you, I know we don't talk about uncomfortable, not so great stuff, but had you heard rumors about him back in that era or no?
Not till afterwards. No.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of a, unfortunately, just a kind of a running joke.
It wasn't a joke to those folks.
No, it wasn't.
You know, they went here like every month, the Boston Gardens, and this one was filmed April 22nd, 1989. It was actually televised on NESN, and you and Lord Alfred Hayes are doing commentary for the show.
There's this may have been the date where we did the, and that is Mel Phillips, by the way. This may have been the date where we did the Boston Garden at night, Madison Square Garden during the day.
There were three shows that day. There was one at the Philadelphia Spectrum, and that was 14,089 fans. And there was one in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and then this one in Boston. So three shows that day in Philly, in Winston-Salem, and in Boston.
Yeah, okay. So this wasn't the day, but we would all go out to dinner afterwards. Me and Nelson Swegler. And I can't remember. Bruce may have been with that too, because we would drive from Connecticut to Boston and then go to dinner after this great Italian restaurant where may not be there, really close to the garden. If you're watching on video, you can see that that scout is here and she is causing us a lot of trouble. Come here, girl. Hey, stop it. He, as always, causes problems. Hey, what do you do? Get away from here. Sorry.
Do you have to use your daddy voice like that with talent sometimes? Get your ass in here and do this pre-tape, that sort of thing.
I don't use, yeah, kind of, but I do it sometimes to
in a funny way, not in a mean way.
You know, okay. I'm not telling you who I was talking to the other day, but we were trying to get this talent to do their pre-tape. And they were fucking with me and they were ready. And so I was shouting where everybody could hear. I said, could you get your fucking ass fucking over here to get the, do the fucking pre-tape? And they said, hey, we're fucking ready. I said, well, you know what? We're ready. And it doesn't look like you're there. So that's kind of how I say it sometimes.
I love you for that.
Yeah, I do. So, and you've seen me give people shit.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah.
And I was not the type of person that gave people a lot of shit until I met you. And then I learned the master at work and I thought, okay, that sounds pretty good. I'll try this.
Well, here's the thing. It's fun. It's easy. It keeps everything lighthearted. It moves it along. Makes the day go faster. Laughing makes the day go faster. Lanny Poffo here, man. It's his debut match against Jim Powers. You know, Lanny Poffo was, it was an interesting gimmick. You know, I mean, this is, I didn't necessarily love when he wore the suit of armor and threw frisbees, but the Genius, this was heat. He's going to come out and read poetry. And I mean, I remember as a kid hating the Genius. So he did his job very well, but
yeah,
it felt like when Randy went to WCW, they never did anything with him over there. I mean, he got the Gorgeous George trademark and dyed his hair and it never really worked out. Did you spend any time with Lanny at all in WCW? Did you see him hanging around or any of that?
I would just say hello to him and talk to him. The most time I really got to spend with Lanny Poffo was he and I were doing an autograph signing we were in New Jersey, and then we went to Staten Island, did an autograph signing. It's where I met Thunder Rosa and the Twisted Sisters, and we went out to eat, and he and I did a lot of talking then. And he was talking about his time at WCW, and he realized that the only reason he got a paycheck was because of his brother. And he said, I was cool with that. He said, so I make no bones about it. But that's the only time I got to spend with. Then, of course, Lanny died, you know, shortly thereafter.
He finished up with the WWF in November of 92. He would pop back up for one house show in June of 94 in Richmond, Virginia.
Wow.
He worked a whopping one show for WCW. It was a WCW Saturday night taping in Fort Myers, Florida in October of 97. And that was it. Just independent shots from then on. But he's one of those guys where I can't help but think there was a missed opportunity. He could have done more. He didn't have to just be Randy's brother who got a paycheck. And by the way, I know people begrudge that and sort of make fun of that and all that, but doesn't that go to tell you how much Randy loved and took care of his family? Because realistically, the way that went was, hey, Randy, we can pay you this amount. Can you pay me a little less and give the difference to my brother? I mean, that had to be the otherwise no business guy would go with, okay, yeah, that works. They knew this is our investment in Randy. We just got to factor it in. Either Randy's worth that or not. And Randy's work and reputation and effort, it provided a lifestyle for his brother. I mean, I don't think Randy gets enough praise for that. That's amazing.
Yeah. That I don't begrudge them at all for that. When Lanny told me this story, I didn't like, oh, really? You really got paid for doing nothing? Hey, if you take a look at what's going on in wrestling today, okay, there's a lot of people out there getting a lot more money than Lanny Poffo did and doing a lot less.
Right.
I'm telling you that right now with us and with them, with WWE. It's kind of the nature of the business right now. That's the way it is. I'd like to also say hello to Coach Keith Morrison, who's with us. Brooke McGaw, my goddaughter, came on and chased her husband, Patrick, away so he would finally do some work today. Thank you, Brooke.
We need him doing something.
Yeah. He obviously does nothing.
Hey, speaking of doing nothing, we should mention that we didn't do nothing when it came to, a big member of the show, who's unfortunately no longer with us. The Biggity Bug, his legacy is going to live on through a variety of ways. First of all, I want to mention that we've still got some bug shirts that are available over at loisrules.com. I want to encourage you to check that out. All the proceeds are going to go to Angels Among Us Pet Rescue. That's loisrules.com. Anytime you get some bug merch, we're going to pay it forward and help some little buggers find a new family to love. And we actually are going to round up our first month's donations between all of the proceeds from the merch that we sold. Tony's kicking in. I'm kicking in $1,000 to help some dogs find some new families to love. Angels Among Us, man. Really cool idea. Really cool initiative. Glad we were able to do it. And just wanted to let everybody know that a Bug's legacy is going to live on through all those dogs who are getting new families.
Yeah, and if you're looking on video, you can see right behind me there are two beagles. They are alive, they don't look that way. They look like they've been run over by something if you're watching on YouTube. But that's just the way they do. They play so hard early in the mornings, and then they're just like mid-morning from where we're recording right now. They just sack out, and they get their energy, and by about noon, they're going to run Lois's ass over down the kitchen. So a lot of fun on many levels, but I would like to get, and I even mentioned this online. I would like to get another Chihuahua. Lois has, put her 2 cents in and told me, no, we're not going to get another Chihuahua now. Fucker. I'm going to get another Chihuahua.
Yeah. What's she going to do?
Yeah. Right. But you know, it's very difficult to find one because there's so many out there. I mean, if I could, I would adopt everyone I would see.
Well, I mean, I can get you a half dozen by the end of the week if you want.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
I got a Chihuahua plug. I got a Chihuahua guy.
I'm sure.
By the way, this is a long match for this era. I mean, we've seen a bunch of like, you know, 2 minute, 3 minute matches. How about that somersault splash right there? That was ahead of its time. Lanny Poffo gets the win in nearly 11 minutes here. That was a long TV match, but that's his debut. And what a finish. And look at how wrestling's changed. He's not working the hard camera like they would years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Like some of the guys do in AEW.
That wears your ass out, doesn't it?
Ugh. I literally want to roll in the ring and grab their ass and turn them around to the hard camera.
Can I ask what the fuck's going on with your hair? Is that okay to ask?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the fuck's going on with your hair?
I changed my hairstyle.
I noticed on TV, or actually I didn't notice, a friend of ours, Bad Money Slim, sent it to me and said, what the fuck did Tony do to his hair? And I was like, how did I not see that right away?
Okay, I tried to part it in the middle for a while, and it fucking didn't work.
Yeah, it looked stupid.
Looked like shit.
Yeah.
So I went back to, and so what they're doing now, they're cutting it really close on the sides and off in the back. So I don't have the long thing in the back anymore.
Now, why did you, because a long time that was like your signature, and I guess you had had a neck surgery once upon a time, and you were trying to use that as like a curtain back there?
Yeah, well, I didn't give a shit, but Lois kept saying, need to cover up that, that surgery, that scar.
I think it looks better shorter.
I do too. So,
and scars are cool, man. I mean, yeah. I know your wife doesn't, but chicks dig scars.
Yeah. There you go. Also, as far as Bug is concerned, do we want to show the tattoo?
Oh yeah. I'm glad you're cool with us showing this. You have memorialized Bug even more. Now, when we first started doing this podcast years ago, Tony, how many tattoos did you have when What Happened When first debuted?
Zero.
And slowly but surely, we've talked about adding some. Oh, look at this handsome son of a gun here. We'll talk about Bug in a minute. Yeah. Here's Tony Schiavone. How would you describe that hair right there?
That is a pretty fucking cool mullet. And that's what I tried to do with my hair recently. And then said, nah, fuck it. Doesn't work on an old man. Okay, this interview with Miss Elizabeth was completely scripted by Vince. And Miss Elizabeth and I got in there with Vince in his office, and he gave us word for word what he wanted us to say. And I never will forget that. And we practiced together and practiced together. I never will forget that, which was unusual for me, right? Just holding the microphone all those years for Ric Flair and the Horsemen and Dusty. You just said, here's Dusty, and you bring him in. But if you're watching with us, you can see that I've got a kind of a long question here I'm asking her, which is unusual for me. So this was really out of the norm for me to do that. And it was one of those moments where I thought, you know what? I've come to the right place. I've come to a place that really wants to use me for more than just wants to tell me what to do. I've always appreciated bosses who instruct me on how they want to do something and why they want to be done that way. Vince was like that. Cowboy Bill Watts was like that. I tell everybody all the time. There you see the sign of Scary Sensational Sherry. And boy, Elizabeth was beautiful, wasn't she?
Sure was, man. I mean, really this is kind of the end of an era too, because Miss Elizabeth in this interview with you is basically saying that she's with Hulk Hogan and she's going to manage him as long as he needs her, sort of thing. And that's sort of a transition for her. I mean, she is no longer going to be like a full-time character who's at every match, as she was for Randy Savage. And she becomes almost like a guest star for the next few years. And that's not a bad thing, just saying that, you know, this was a transition period for her. And it was really working. I mean, just a few days after this aired is when they had the Rosemont Horizon match with the Macho Man taking on Hulk Hogan. 16,000 fans were there. It's a non-televised event. She was on Hulk Hogan's corner. But yeah, so they're keeping her babyface, even though Randy's a heel. She's still, you know, the first lady of the World Wrestling Federation. I don't think there's been a character that's been presented like her in wrestling since. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree with it because she was, she just held herself very ladylike, elegant way. And Vince absolutely loved her character. I introduced her right there as the manager of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Something to that extent, what I did. okay, so let's see. Back to the bug tattoo.
Yes.
Okay. I got, and we've shown it here before. I got the bug tattoo many years ago. And then when Bug passed away, Conrad, you sent me what you thought was a real cool tattoo.
Yeah.
And I saw that and went, oh, fucking I am going to. So I got my same tattoo artist, Craig Brock, who you're going to see here in a minute. There's Craig. Big wrestling fan. Also, he's the one that did the neck tattoo for Cody.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So Craig, worked with the design that you got. And we also got an ink print of Bug's paw.
His actual paw.
His actual paw print the day he was put down. So there we got it. There's a Bug's paw print on top. We cleaned it up a little bit because it had, you know, hair in it and everything. Print did. At the bottom is Bug's paw going to heaven and me reaching out. And that was what you sent us. And then, Craig put, 2010 to 2024. He did that on his own on the bottom, but that is the same bug tattoo. We just added the paw on the top, the dates in the bottom. And then that tattoo you sent me. So there you go. That's my left arm. That's what it looks like. And yeah, obviously, he meant a lot to me. So there you go. With me forever, man. How about that?
Super cool, man. I'm just super happy that you got that time with him and you had that relationship. And
yeah,
you know, Hillbilly Jim used to cut funny, silly promos, and it's true. He would say, you know, I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. Mm-hmm. And boy, you and Bug sure did have a good time. Yeah. And when the story of our lives are told, those relationships will be, you know, what mattered the most. Nobody will talk about how much money Shivani made with AEW or WCW or, you know, all the great matches that he called. Nobody's going to talk about all that. Really. They're going to talk about the way you made them feel and the way, you know, you felt about Bug and he felt about you. Nobody can ever take that away from you. And I think tattoos, right. I don't have any, should be personal. I can't think of anything more important, more personal than your relationship with Bug. That's now been memorialized in a really cool way. So good for you. Good for Craig Brock and, rest in peace, Biggity Bug.
Yeah, it's Bug was my sounding board. I don't know how many times I had him upstairs in here or in the bedroom, and I would look at him and say, "What the fuck is wrong with her? Why did I marry that woman? What the hell?" I mean, he was like, "What the hell's going on in my job? Okay, why am I working at Starbucks?" Shit like that. And he always had an answer, and that was to lick me in the face. That was his answer. So I knew I was loved.
Yeah, man. That's it. Yeah. That's what dogs are about to me. Yes. I know that, you know, once upon a time, Cassio was really working hard to train his dog, and he's got a great dog, Hank.
Hank. Yeah.
And one of the things that the trainer told, you know, Cassio about Hank is you can't humanize the dog. You know, if you humanize the dog, then, you know, they're not going to be as obedient and they're not going to listen as well and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, what does humanize mean? And he goes, he means like, you know, you can't like hug them and kiss them and all that. And I was like, well, fuck that. That's the only reason I have dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my dogs are getting hugs and kisses and belly scratches like the entire time they're with me. Like, that's what I do. So I guess I'm a bad dog owner and, No, they're not the most well-behaved, but boy, they sure are loved.
Exactly. Kirby, who is our first beagle, we first took her to, we went to this place, Lois and I, and took her to this to get trained. And the first thing the girl told us was, can't let you got to establish boundaries. Can't let your dogs on the couch. or can't let your dogs on your bed. Lois and I walked out of the thinking, it's the last time we go to that lady.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're doing. Then we found another one who's been our trainer. We've hit her at her ear of the house many times. Mr. Epic said he is currently on a trip to save six dogs from a puppy mill.
Oh, wow. Good for you, Mr. Epic. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you, brother. We appreciate you. And there you see it if you're watching. We appreciate that.
Dave Wagner is the opponent here for Bret Hart. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to mention this is 89. We've mostly been seeing the Hart Foundation in tag team action, but we're trying Bret as a singles here, which we did here, there, and yawn. We know he's going to become the man at SummerSlam 1991 when he wins the Intercontinental title from that man, Mr. Perfect, who's doing a cut in. But you can clearly see that Vince is planning on moving Bret up the cards here. He's going to make short work of Dave Wagner here. This is also from that Des Moines show. The referee is Danny Davis. But did you see in this era, 1989, could you see that Bret was going to be one of the top guys? Or did you think, hey, he's a nice tag team guy. Maybe they'll give him a nice intercontinental run. Or could you have seen him as a world champion here?
No, I couldn't have. And it's because I think because Hulk Hogan, and this of course was kind of getting near the end of the end of Hulkamania, right? This era. But Hulk Hogan was this bigger than life personality that I thought anybody who was going to be a star would have to be a bigger than life personality like Hulk Hogan. And Bret Hart wasn't.
Right.
Great wrestler. One of the greatest ever of all time. No question. But did he have the over the top personality of Hulk Hogan? No, he didn't. And I thought anybody who would ever take that spot would have that. And that's what they attempted to do with the Ultimate Warrior, which I guess flopped.
Yeah, it didn't do a super big business. That's for sure. But we know that, you know, Bret Hart is going to become, oh man, look at the way they did that too. Hitman is two words, not one word.
Yeah.
But the evolution here. And it's so cool to see, you know, Bret before he was the big star that we know he's going to go on to be there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think about that all the time. Like, we've got so many great talent that we get to see week in, week out with AEW, because it feels like Tony is letting someone make their national television debut every week. I mean, just this past week, we saw, you know, the new Dynamite Kid. And to think, you know, of just the legacy and the heritage, and then what could be with some of these young talent. It's neat to go back and take a look 35 years ago, because nobody would have guessed, hey, Bret's going to be one of the top guys and one of the greatest wrestlers that ever lived. You wouldn't have guessed that from that match with Dave Wagner, but there it was.
Yeah. And, you know, not only that, and if you watched the show on Saturday, our doubleheader, you heard what Nigel said about how AEW goes out and lets these kids who have made a name for themselves on the independent circuit come in and give it a shot on national TV.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's one of the things that Tony does very, very well. So here's Bad News Brown, which was also Bad News Allen, right?
Yes.
Okay. And of course was the mentor of Jericho and Don Callis, a Canadian and no longer is with us. And, I always liked the way he presented his business. I mean, just like a badass motherfucker, right?
Yes.
I had the glove on the right hand, always had that scowl on his face.
He looks like a movie bad guy.
Yes, he does. Very well said. Very well said.
That guy felt like a damn tree. Timber! That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, we want to hear from you guys. Let us know what you'd like for us to watch in the coming weeks here on What Happened When. We're always soliciting feedback, and one of the places to do that is over on our YouTube page. If you haven't already, check out our community page. Be sure to comment in the comments. We're monitoring those. And
my God,
you never know when we're going to go live, because that is our intent. We're going to start going live on YouTube, and it's totally free. So go hit the subscribe button and turn on the notifications bell at whwmonday.com. That's whwmonday.com. And we want to hear from you. I love watching old school WWF from 35 years ago, but maybe you want us to watch something kind of silly or something you attended, whatever it may be. Make those recommendations and we'll keep them coming.
Okay. Dave Silva, put that graphic back up.
You don't like that graphic? Please?
Yeah. Okay. On the left, that's me taking a shit.
Oh, with your jacket on.
With my jacket on. On the right, that's me saying, ooh, look at the size of that turd.
Okay. And what's the guy in the middle doing?
That's the turd.
That looks like, I mean, you look like a character from Ferris Bueller's Day Off in the middle right there.
I sure do. God, that's so baby face. Holy shit.
The ultimate baby face.
Thank you, Dave. Dave makes those graphics. I don't know where he came up with that stuff. Oh, God. I sent Dave a bunch of one time just.
Different faces,
yeah.
He asked me to do that, too. And I guess we've spent enough time doing live shows together. He can just rip them off now. But
yeah,
it was like, what do you mean a bunch of different faces? So I took a stab at it, but it was silly and it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a green screen here. I probably should send him some more.
Hey, we haven't mentioned this on the show, but you know, your boy Dave Silva, he's moving back to Texas at the end of the month. How about that?
I heard that you know, apparently Jeff Jones keeps up with you guys a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
Jeff Jones told me that. And I went, what? Is he moving back to the same house, same town?
No, when they moved to Alabama, they were leaving sort of his family in his neck of the woods in Harlingen, but they're moving now to be right across the street from his in-laws. So his wife, Heather, her family lives right across the street, her parents. And I guess her mom is having some health challenges and needs a little help. Okay. And his kids didn't get to spend a lot of time with that set of grandparents. So here's a golden opportunity. Help mom out a little bit. Let the kids spend a little more time with that set of grandparents. Because the house right across the street became available. So at the end of the school year, they're going to hook it up. Because as you know, Tony, we don't have to be in the same town in order to do what we're doing right here. Like, you know, he can produce us. He's not in my house. He's in his house. And he can be in his house in South Huntsville or San Antonio and still do this with us each and every week. So,
and to just add on to that, we have meetings all the time at AEW. And we're in our own home.
Virtual, yeah.
Yeah, everything's virtual now. That's the way the world is coming to it. I even heard again yesterday on, I was listening to Sirius, 70s on 7. And they were talking about how Kiss is going to have a virtual tour now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You go out to see Kiss, but it's going to be artificial intelligence doing Kiss.
Okay.
Why would you pay to go see that?
I'm not going to.
No, that's the stupidest thing ever. But it just goes to show how virtual things are. Hey, this guy that just did the flop.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can do a screen capture him, because damn if this isn't Paulie Dangerously.
You think so? You think that's Jim Merkel or Kevin Michelson?
I think it's Kevin Michelson, isn't it? But you're not going to see his face now. But man, when they were announcing the guys earlier and he turned and he was John with the guys, I'm thinking, damn, that's a very skinny Paul Heyman. And now they fly in Axe and Smash.
I think we're going to have something fun here happen towards the end. But we've got the fly in here, the little promo, the picture in a picture type two screen promo Jones here with Demolition. Meanwhile, the Twin Towers, Big Boss Man, former Big Bubba Rogers, former UWF heavyweight champion, tagging in the former one man gang who, may or may not be my father.
George really,
he was having fun. You could tell.
Yeah. He was all in with this character. He was all in.
My goodness.
So Dave Silva's moving back to Texas.
Yeah, man, it's weird, you know, sort of the end of an era. I'm leaving the quote unquote Conradison. The big neon sign that was in the cabana by the pool has been taken down. The house has been painted. Roof's been cleaned. They're coming to steam clean all the tile and hardwoods and showers and pool deck, and it's a goner. And so is Silva going back to Texas, where he belongs.
Yeah, he does. Stay down there, Dave.
Yeah, we'll see you at StarCast. Or you know what? Skip that too and see see you at Zooms.
When's the next StarCast? Do you have a date? You have a
I had one, but it changed on Friday.
Okay. All right. We'll just wait until it comes out.
Yeah. Things are changing, as you probably heard whispers about, maybe.
I haven't.
Well, I don't want to.
All right.
I can't say.
Yeah.
I can tell you off air, but I was asked not to say.
Okay.
Roll Tide. listen, I love this era of Bobby Heenan and Gorilla, and it makes me wonder, like, do you think when it comes to like iconic two-man duos, like I think a lot of people who are my age would probably say this pair or JR and the King as like 1A and 1B, just classic duos. Do you think there is a younger generation coming up now who will look at, you know, Utah's and Excalibur that way? Or do you think that chemistry is two guys, not three guys?
Boy, that's a great question. That's a great question. I always thought when you think of broadcast, you think of broadcast duos.
Right.
Because that's kind of the way they do things now, with the exception of baseball. Baseball uses three. But football kind of uses a two-man booth, with the exception of bringing in the referee or one of the officials from the league to talk about the calls, which bother me. Does that bother you?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't annoy me as much as it does you, I think. But
yeah, I think it annoys you because, I watch a lot more NFL than I do anything else.
Right.
If I watch sports. And it seems like every call, they're bringing in some official to look at it, and it's like they are...
It's slowing the game down.
It's slowing the game down, and to me, it is making every call that they're second-guessing every call.
Yes.
So, sometimes video replay is great. Sometimes it can be too intrusive. They just let the game go, man. Fuck, keep moving. Anyway, so... I have no idea where I was going with that. So, here are the Bushwhackers. And I got to see Luke at WrestleCon, which is no longer with us. And Luke was very happy about my career and told me about it and watching and everything. But no, I think the most iconic two-man broadcast team, I think I mentioned this earlier, is JR and Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
You could put Heenan and Gorilla next. And I even put Gorilla and Jesse Ventura up there because they were basically the play-by-play guys for the big WWF shows back then. But those are like one and two to me.
I agree. I think most would. But we want to hear from you. Oh, look at Mooney doing the Bushwhacker deal. That's fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you never know what resonates with somebody. Like as a kid, I was not a Bushwhacker fan at all. But only in recent years did I learn... That was Cassio's favorite tag team as a kid. He loved the Bushwhackers.
Wow.
And as a kid, I was not into Tito Santana at all, but I learned in recent years that was Dave Silva's favorite wrestler. So it turns out representation matters. You know, a little Mexican Dave Silva loved the Mexican WWE superstar Tito Santana, and little sloppy eater Matt Mitchell really loved grown sloppy eaters Bushwhackers as a tag team. Representation is important.
There is out there somewhere where we were in, like I mentioned this before, and I know there's pictures. I have a couple of pictures of it. We went out and shot a skit with Gene Okerlund and the Bushwhackers, where we went to this Bushwhacker, went to this old abandoned hut.
I saw that.
Yeah, brought in a grill, and Gene kind of turned into a Bushwhacker when they were eating their buzzard. And I remember Luke reaching in, eating the buzzard, and burning his fingers. But he just kept on working, man. And they were great to work with. Me and this girl, I can't remember her name, worked in the office. We had come up with this idea of a bushwhacker, of a thing called the bushwhacker hut, where it was almost, kid-like, and where it would be part of the show, and was kind of like a ripoff of Piper's Pit, you know?
Right.
And we even had someone draw up the design of it. And we presented it to Vince. He didn't like it, so it went nowhere. But I thought back then as a producer that you could do a lot with the Bushwhackers. A lot. And I guess Vince thought we've done enough with them. What we're doing with them right now is good enough. So I had a lot of time for Luke and Butch. And again, you know, I've talked about this. The Bushwhackers in the WWF era, which were the Bushwhackers, which were the duo that got over, much different than the Sheepherders in the NWA era.
Yes.
Because they were blood and guts and cut themselves and bled all the time and rough and rugged. And then they became, well, again, just like we saw with George Gray and what used to be the one man gang. He just went all in with his new character, and the Bushwhackers went all in with theirs. I mean, this moving the arms up became iconic, right?
Fumble here at the Conradison. Yes, it became iconic. People are still doing it to this day, and I'm glad they're no longer doing this press slam. Al Burke just got dropped like a bad habit by the Ultimate Warrior and going to get a big splash. And I think Warrior's even going to carry him backstage after the match. This is before he's Intercontinental Champion. We know this is sort of beginning of the summer, but by the end of the summer, SummerSlam will be here and he will become the Intercontinental Champion. Could you see in this era, like, hey, he's going to be one of the next top guys? Did you think that he could perhaps follow Hulk Hogan in this era?
I remember when we were told that it would be Ultimate Warrior against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6. I remember thinking, wow, that's novel, because fans love Ultimate Warrior.
Yes.
Fans love Hogan. And normally you had a villain to face Hogan at WrestleMania. And this time it's going to be a babyface facing Hogan. I thought it was novel. I thought that, and again, talking about larger than life characters, Ultimate Warrior was that. His character was bigger than the person himself.
Coming up next is something that I've never seen, and I can't wait for you guys to see it with me. It is a real dream match that I can't believe happened. It's Coco Beware and the Blue Blazer. They're teaming up. Now, you would see them later as High Energy, but Coco Beware and the Blue Blazer taking on the Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, with Bobby the Brain Heenan in their corner. I mean, this is really cool, man. Like, I wouldn't have guessed this match ever happened, but here it is. This is going to be fun.
I wouldn't have guessed either, but obviously while they were there, they used the Brainbusters a lot.
Yes.
And hell, rightfully so, right?
But I mean, just Owen Hart working with Arn and Tully is like, wow. And here we got it, man. Coco Beware looking as only he can look. Got the Birdman suit on, got Frankie. And here is the Blue Blazer and maybe our favorite tag team of all time. I mean, one of them for certain, Arn and Tully. Can you imagine if they would have stuck together as a tag team? I mean, when people talk about them as being one of the greatest all time tag teams, and I know FTR hold them in that place, they weren't together really all that long as a tag team. You're only talking about a handful of years, but
right,
man, they had great matches every single night.
Yeah. And you know what? So does FTR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was talking with Dax the other day and I said, listen, you guys, I've never seen you guys have a bad match. And he really appreciated that. And I was sincere. I wasn't trying to suck up to him. I don't need to suck up to anybody anymore. But I just really appreciate what Dax and Cash, and even Dax, and as we're recording today, and as this airing, he's going to be facing Okada tonight.
Oh my, I missed that. Holy shit. Yeah. What a match that is.
never disappoints, and Arn and Tully never disappointed as well. You know, the ability to quote unquote do a promo and be able to work. Many few people were able to do that, and the ones that could were stars. Whatever happened to Frankie? Oh, what happened to Frankie? I know he's no longer with us. Was the bird petrified? Do you ever hear stories about that when he came out? Coco Beware ever talk about that?
You know, I'm not sure. I think, unfortunately, Frankie died in a fire.
God, really?
I think so.
He was always flapping his wings. I just wonder if he just was scared to death. He had to settle down. If he shit himself, I don't know.
That's a great question because yeah. I'll be honest, I never considered it because I just grew up with, hey, this guy brings a Komodo dragon to the ring. This guy brings a bulldog. This guy brings a snake. This guy brings a bird. I mean, there's all these over-the-top presentations and gimmicks in the WWF. I was just used to it. And it never even really crossed my mind until I think it was AEW. I think it was in Chicago, maybe. And Cody went to bring Pharaoh to the ring with him. And the pyro went off. And, man, Pharaoh was not having a good time. He did not enjoy that at all. And that never crossed my mind because I'm just like, well, there's been so many animal, but we're learning as we get older and better as a society. Hey, maybe we should take the feelings of the animal into consideration here and not stress this little rascal out. So,
right. Yeah, that's true. I think it was at the first Double or Nothing
you're probably right.
Pharaoh didn't react well to the pyro.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's, I remember Laurie, my daughter, used to say, why don't you bring Bug with you on the road? I went, well, I'm not going to leave him in the hotel.
Yes.
And I'm not taking him to the venue where I'm out front doing a show and he's back there and behind and the pyro hits. I said, I'm not doing that to him. So that's why I never took Bug with me.
One of the rare occasions where even he would rather be with Lois.
I still don't think he'd rather be with it. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, he loved Lois too. Gosh, I mean, when I was gone, he sat in her lap the entire time.
Wow.
I was gone. So yeah, he not only missed by me, missed by Lois. But yeah, bringing animals to the ring and it just, yeah, freaks them out. Right. I mean, and I go back to it makes me laugh and maybe I shouldn't. I go back to Oz and the monkey on the chain.
Sullivan. That was not good.
That was not good. The monkey tried to hang himself.
The monkey died.
That night?
Yeah. The pyro went off. The monkey jumped. Kevin Sullivan had it on a leash. And unfortunately, I think they broke that monkey's neck accidentally.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because when he started to go crazy, I mean, this is the story I've heard. That the thing's going crazy. And Kevin's got it on a leash so it doesn't run out in front of the crowd or whatever. But when that pyro goes off, the monkey just jumps like, get me the hell out of here, which I understand.
Right.
But I think when he did it, because Kevin had him on a leash, cracked his neck and that was it. And I think that's the reason maybe they cut away because they didn't want to show Kevin dragging a dead monkey to the ring. We got better, guys. And I know that sounds like a horrible story, but I can only imagine the horrible shit that's happened in the circus before that got outlawed.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know,
And that was the same show where Big Josh
had the bears pissing all the way to the ring.
Pissing all the way to the ring, which was fucking hilarious.
One of the all time. But again, why are there bears? And in WCW, who the shit got Scott Steiner approved to bring a tiger to the ring? I mean, there's just crazy stuff through the years with animals.
Oh, yeah.
The animal I like best in wrestling was a Hawk's tag team partner.
Yes, he was the best one.
Yes.
And unfortunately, he's no longer with us as well.
But Kevin Sullivan didn't have him on a leash.
No.
Hey, we need to shout out Kevin Sullivan. I know you don't know this, but I got word this morning, and I hope I'm not betraying confidences. But boy, if you're listening to this live, throw a little thoughts and prayers to Kevin. He and I normally record on Monday, and we have a fun bonus piece of content we create for ad-free shows called Tuesdays with the Taskmaster. And it's always just been pre-recorded, but last week we did our first live one and loved it. And I was looking forward to doing a live one with a live studio audience today, but Kevin has had a medical event and is undergoing an emergency surgery. I don't have any other details right now, but before we got going today, I got that news and threw one up for Kevin. And I hope if you're listening to this, you will too, because he is such a valuable member of our little wrestling community. And just thinking about him today as we're recording.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I'm going to reach out to him as well. Oh, man. We all do get older.
It sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Now, the Blue Blazer is going to go up top and try to do a moonsault before it's time. Unfortunately, it was ruined by Arn Anderson.
This has got to be the finish here.
Yeah.
Oh, head between the legs, going up for the pile driver, and here comes Tully. Spike pile driver, the best looking one in the business. That'll do it for the Blue Blazer. Brainbusters get the win. That was a great match, man. That was fun.
Yeah, it was. Again, just like FTR today, Arn and Tully never had a bad match. They may have had a bad match during an arena event. I don't know. I always thought that the Ultimate Pros are going to try to give you a great match, regardless of the size of the venue or where you're wrestling, but especially on TV, never a bad match.
No. Coming up next in our main event, it's Hacksaw Jim Duggan challenging King Haku.
Oh God.
And the King title is on the title. Now, no, I'm not saying it's a title belt, but you know, King Haku is supposed to be the King of the Ring here in the WWF. And
right.
We're going to have that up for grabs. So if Hacksaw Jim Duggan wins, he gets the crown and the cape, and he's the king of the World Wrestling Federation. And this is a pretty cool moment, you know, because we've seen Harley Race portray this, and now Haku, and we're about to go Jim Duggan. And we know next up will be the Macho Man Randy Savage. I like Hacksaw as a transition to Savage being the Macho King.
Right. I love the Macho King.
I did too. It was underrated. Yeah. And I think, don't get me wrong, I love the Macho Man, but I thought he more than held his own as Macho King.
Yeah, I do too. Well, Jim Duggan's not coming out with any animals, just 2x4 and the flag.
But everybody's got a gimmick. Isn't it crazy when you think about it?
Yeah. And a flying from the genius. I'm sure he's reading a poem there.
We got the King title on the line here. Of course, as a reminder, King Haku is a part of the Heenan family. Joey Morella is your referee. Howard Finkel is your ring announcer. Neither one of those folks are with us any longer, but we know Hacksaw still is. And King Haku is Ming, as a lot of WCW fans know him. How about that foam thumb there?
Yeah.
For Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
You know what blows me away? Those teenagers you see in the audience right now.
They're old.
They're in their 50s.
Yeah. Or 60s.
Or 60s. Absolutely.
So, here we go. We've got King Haku being carried to the ring here. And if you watch the WWE programming these days, you know that both of his sons have just recently debuted with WWE as part of the Bloodline storyline. The mainstays of the Bullet Club and New Japan Pro Wrestling for several years. Mm-hmm. Man, what a legacy that, you know, King Haku has in wrestling when you think about it. I mean, this reputation as being one of the biggest badasses in the history of wrestling. He had a great run here in the WWF, a great run in WCW, and two sons who really ran roughshod over Japan for quite a while. And now part of the biggest storyline in WWE. This is quite a legacy his family's put together.
They are great kids from a great father, and I'm happy for all of them. Truly, Ming, or King Haku here, is one of my favorite people of all time.
The nicest, gentlest man. Mm-hmm. But if you piss him off, he'll bite your fucking face off.
Exactly. If he got a little bit of alcohol in him and you wanted to fuck with him at the bar, you have fucked the wrong person.
And even today, by the way, because I got to see him in January, he greets me with a hug hello. Mm-hmm. You like touch that guy's shoulder and you're like, X. There's some old man strength in there.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we pad the lope for him.
We had his son show up in Charlotte to wrestle for us.
Yeah.
In AEW when he was, I think, the New Japan Pro Wrestling or IWGP, whatever, U.S. champion.
Yeah.
So Ming was there with him. And, you know, I always give Arn a hard time when I see him. And I walked in catering and Arn, a bunch of guys were sitting there. Arn was sitting by Haku. First thing Arn did was look up at me and says, give me some shit now.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Give me some shit now. And he looked at Ming like, yeah, I'm sitting beside this guy. He'll fuck you up. So everybody in the business knew it. Everybody in the business loved him. And just a big, broad smile on his face, always just. And I'm happy with the family. I really, really am. Happy for them to be part of the bloodline. Is it what they're calling themselves? Bloodline?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And, of course, very happy for Cody as well. And the star that he has become. Deservedly so.
Tony, I know that you're traveling every weekend and you don't get much of a chance to keep up with everything that's going on in other companies. I understand that. I mean, you're putting together three shows a week. You're traveling two towns a week, yada, yada, yada. However, I do want to mention a couple of weeks back, there was a pay-per-view that happened in Lyon, France, and the crowd was unlike anything you've ever seen before. It's the first PLE in France ever. And that crowd was super wild all night to the point that during the main event with AJ Styles and Cody Rhodes, a match that a lot of people were critical of, saying, oh, well, we know AJ's not going to win. And oh, AJ's past his prime. And oh, who cares about this? Dave Meltzer awarded it 5 stars in the Observer, but the fans in the building were so raucous for it, Tony, that the hard cam was literally shaking. I mean, I talked to Cody afterwards and I said, hey man, all time, where does that crowd rank? He said, loudest for me ever, bar none, never done anything like it. And I just recently recorded with Bruce and I said, Bruce, you've been around the WWF since 1987. Where does that crowd rank? No comparison. Loudest he's ever seen ever. And mm-hmm. I know you don't have 3 hours to watch the whole show, but I would encourage you just watch the entrances and that match with Cody and AJ, because there's never been a crowd like that before. I mean, to the point where they actually, for Randy Orton, that weekend, they sang his song, like all of the lyrics, like that's, it was very unusual. It was a special crowd. And, you know, you and I have watched before, like Hogan wrestle The Rock at WrestleMania 18 and how fantastic that crowd was for it. This was somehow wilder, which is just, you don't expect that. So I would encourage you to see it just to see the crowd component.
Maybe we ought to watch it as part of a bonus podcast on Patreon.
Oh, there you go. But I want you to watch it with the sound on.
Okay.
You got to at least hear. Oh, look at that, man. You know, I kind of forgot this was really a squash because Haku got very little offense in this. And I remember right. They turned this into a feud because I remember a series of matches. I mean, this thing goes months with King Haku and Hacksaw Duggan, but or you see Bobby Heenan taking off with the cape and the robe like, no, we're out of here. But man, that was one-sided. Hacksaw just ran right through him.
Yeah, and the fans really popped when he won it.
Oh, he's over.
Yeah.
Oh. Is that Pat Patterson?
Sure is.
With dark hair. How about that?
With dark hair. Apparently, he didn't get back in the ring. He then walked away with it.
So he misses the big somersault. Hacksaw gets in the three-point stance, big clothesline, and that gets it done. Look at the crowd, man.
Yeah.
Hacksaw was over. Beefcake was over. These are iconic characters, man.
Yeah, they do. And even to this day, but even more so back then, they knew how to make stars.
Yeah,
they did. The Jim Herd era of WCW had no idea how to make stars. And there a lot could be said about, you know, when WCW were doing well, we had used stars that were developed in the WWE. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's a star making machine.
Well, we had a lot of fun watching primetime wrestling here today. This is from May 15th, 1989. And we certainly want to hear your suggestions on what you'd like for us to watch in the future. We've been watching some silly stuff over on our Patreon. So if you haven't already checked that out, I want to encourage you to do that. It's patreon.com/WHW Monday. We do not one, but two pieces of bonus content each and every month. And there's years and years and years of stuff in the archives where we watch the good, the bad, and the ugly of professional wrestling. So if you're looking for a little more what happened when, you can find it at patreon.com/WHW Monday. And of course, adfreeshows.com. And want to thank our live studio audience for coming to join us today. And I've been told by our crack producer that there may be something else that you wanted to share or reference today, Tony. Does that ring a bell?
Well, it does not. It's because I'm old and, oh yes, it is. My image, was put out there after, Toni Storm was knocked out by Serena Deeb. It went everywhere and even got back to Lois. So, I think we can, there you go.
And what, there was Tony, what an iconic photo that is.
Toni Storm's reaction. Oh, you dirty bastard. Okay. So here's the deal. I'm not looking at her cooter. Okay. I'm not.
Oh.
Okay. So I want to give her shit. I want to give her shit because I love Toni. She not only is a great character, she is just a wonderful person backstage and so funny. I want to give her shit here. I want to say, get the fuck up, girl, or just something stupid to make her laugh. And I'm trying to do that, but I know the cameras are still on me, so I'm just staring at her, hoping that she'll open her eyes and look at me, which she didn't. And so this came out. So, when Lois got this picture, and she got it from Stooge of the Year, Patrick McGall, sent it to Lois. Okay. When Lois got this picture, I'm thinking, oh God, what is she going to say about it? And here's what she said. You couldn't help the woman up, you dumbass. What she said. So there you go.
Well, Tony, right now, it looks like it's about that time.
Coming to the ring right now, Axe and Smash, and they have somebody who all dressed up in leather and spikes and a leather mask on and a sign pinned on the back of him. It's called, it says The Gimp. And they roll him in the ring. They're going to unmask The Gimp. It's Dave Silva. Look at those naked cheeks. Someone slap an address label on him and say, send to Texas and don't come back. We are desperately out of time. See you next week on What Happened When. We come to you each and every Wednesdays on Westwood One Cumulus. But Mondays, we come to you exclusively and ad-free on
Patreon. Patreon.com/WHW Monday. And of course, adfreeshows.com.